Hi, everyone. Welcome to another episode of Leg Upward Inclusion Spotlight, Making the Invisible Visible with me, Dr. Aparajita Jitagunta. So for today's episode, we are going global all the way to Melbourne, Australia to feature this amazing woman that I actually met on Instagram. So this is someone I've never met in real life. Just following her account and looking at the work that she's doing and just being so inspired by it, I somehow got the courage to send her an email and say, hey, you know, I would love to feature you in my podcast. And to my complete and utter delight, she agreed to record with me. So it is with absolute pleasure that today I want to introduce you to Winitha Bani. Winitha Bani is an expert in the future of work and advancing women of color in leadership and entrepreneurship. She combines over 17 years of research and experience working as an entrepreneur to several startups, as well as over 21 years of experience working in the corporate, for-purpose, and government sectors in various executive roles. Today, Winitha and I are going to be talking about her experiences with diversity and inclusion. And towards the end of the episode, we're going to be talking about her latest venture, which seriously gives me goosebumps every time I read something about it. So I'm very excited to share all of this with you. So without further ado, Winitha Bani from Melbourne, Australia. Hi, Winitha.
Hi, how are you?
Good, how are you?
Good, thank you. Thank you very much for having me on your amazing podcast.
Oh, thank you. You know, I was honestly, when I sent you that email, I wasn't expecting a response. My jaw dropped when, you know, I didn't even get the response from you first. I got your recording session appointment and I thought, is this a joke? And then I went and I looked into my email and you said, done. I was just so thrilled. So thank you so much for being here.
No problem. It's all full support for you.
So, you know, that's one thing. That's where I actually want to start off is, you know, we see so many people on Instagram and, you know, so many different types of accounts and so many different types of people claiming to be everything under the sun. But then I came across your account. And what blew me away is, you know, is that you say you are an expert in entrepreneurship and that your mission is to advance the lives of women of color and advance the professional development of women of color. And you actually do exactly that.
Yeah.
So you are one of those people that I found that you walk the walk and talk the talk. That is incredibly refreshing. So, you know, for our listeners, can you tell me how, or can you tell us how you started on this path?
Yeah, it was, I guess, you know, I lead business in two ways. I have a very methodical, rational way of looking at business, and there's another way which is just very intuitive. Mm-hmm. And I think just a range of experiences that I had in Australia, I also worked in Canada and LA for a while. I think those experiences really informed my body. I had just left a job where I was completely burnt out. I remember sitting on a beach because it was summer in Australia. I was sitting on the beach thinking, first of all, this is what people do when they're not working during the day, thinking, you know, that I have no idea what to do now that I'm sitting on the beach. And I think because I gave myself that opportunity to just, my brain to just think whatever it is that I wanted to think, that intuition just kind of came in and just spoke to me quite softly. And I just sat on the beach and just started thinking about the lack of representation of women of color in leadership and entrepreneurship. You know, for me as a woman of color, I started thinking about my own experiences when I would go to events and participate in different professional development initiatives, and would always see myself as the only or one of like a handful of women of color, let alone people of color. We have our own Shark Tank here in Australia, and we have an entrepreneur that sits on that, Naomi Simpson. And, you know, back before Shark Tank, before she was uber famous, I was emailing her about another startup and getting her advice. She basically said to me, there's no power in hope, only action. Actually, those were those exact words. And that completely stuck with me. And I thought, well, I can do two things. I can advocate for it. And I already saw people in the space advocating on LinkedIn, on social media, or I could take action. For me personally, I think advocating has its place, but I think real power is action. So I decided to do something about it. It doesn't matter what organization or business or initiative I start, it always feels like the first time. So I basically started it, and it's been a really interesting road where I've had different encounters with women of color and allies, and that's every encounter I have just hones into the fact that this is why we need to have work like this in this space, and just reinforces the fact that I need to keep going.
It's really interesting to me that, you know, and you and I spoke on the phone, we talked about how I had my own burnout that led me on this path that I'm on now. Yeah. It's uncanny to me the similarities in the stories that we hear from other women like us, women of color, that it takes that burnout for us to realize, hey, maybe we should listen to that soft voice in our head and actually hear what it's trying to tell us. So before we move into the next segment, what I want to ask you is, to all the other women of color who might be listening to this episode at any point in the future, who are aspiring entrepreneurs, what would your message to them be?
Is to listen to that small voice. I think the greatest superpower we have as women is our intuition, for various biological or non-biological reasons, regardless if you choose to have kids or not. It's just inbuilt in our DNA, and it's incredibly powerful. And it's to really tap into that. I guess for me, it started off as a whisper. What I found is the more that I tap into my intuition, the more that I connect with it, the more I recognize it when I see it. And so for me, it's not just a whisper now. It's the physical feeling. You know, you talked about, you know, goosebumps. You know, for me, it's just a feeling. It's a sensation in the body. And for me, it's to go with that. Because the thing with entrepreneurship, as you will know, is that a lot of people have opinions. A lot of people have thoughts about the way that you should do things. And with Amina Azara, which is what I started for women of color, I dish out advice as well. And I'm always telling people, you know, do a lean canvas model, or do it this way and do it that way. What's your value proposition? And when I went about this startup, I just really felt in my gut, at my core, that I couldn't approach it that way, that it was completely different. It was a heart-centered business. And that's contrary to all the business advice out there, because they're pushing you to think about your revenue streams, what your value proposition is, you know, what your channels are going to be, all this kind of jazz and all these buzzwords. And for me, it came down to the fact that this is actually completely different. This is a heart-centered thing. It's actually not about, you know, revenue. Of course, it needs to pay the bills long-term. But as I'm starting out, let's get to the core of what needs to happen socially first and culturally. So for me, I went with that, and things just naturally unraveled. And when I went with my other side of my brain, with the advice of other people, you know, the ideas did not flow. I felt stuck. I felt stagnated. And that was really my intuition telling me that this is not the way to do this. And so I had to go against that conventional thinking. And that was really, it really came down to my intuition. So for me, it's intuition. Absolutely. There's breadcrumbs. If you think about intuition as breadcrumbs, there's breadcrumbs everywhere around you that are leading you to a path. It's about seeing it and following that trail.
That resonates with me. If something could resonate with me more than 100%, that would be it.
Yeah.
So we're going to take a quick break. When we come back, we're going to completely switch tracks in some way. And you mentioned some very, very interesting things to me in our phone chat a few weeks ago. So that's what I want to talk about. So stick around. We'll be right back after this short break. And we're back on Leg Upward Inclusion Spotlight, Making the Invisible Visible with Winita Bani. So Winita, one of the reasons why I felt really compelled, intuitively compelled, to send you this email asking you if I could feature you in my podcast is what you had told me about the state of diversity and inclusion in Australia, especially the way it compared to your experience when you lived in LA. Would you mind sharing some of that as much as you're comfortable with anybody who might be listening?
Yeah. So I was in Toronto in 2007 and I went to LA in 2008. And I just experienced, walking down the street, a lot more cultural diversity. In Toronto, the Sri Lankan community had their own yellow pages. You know, in Toronto and in Canada, there are like different initiatives and programs and collectives and groups that you could be a part of to advance as a woman of color. And from a business perspective, I saw more women of color leaders in the States than I did in Australia. And being open to those conversations that were being had in the States at that time really opened my eyes up to my own experiences. And so when I came back to Australia and I worked at an executive level, because I guess what happens up to the point is, as one of my friends says, the thing that is non-acceptable becomes acceptable if you have been surrounded by that continuously conditions you. And so for me, that is pretty much what happened to me, was that was what I saw, what was covered in business media in terms of people who ran organizations and people that sat at boards and people that sat in those senior executive positions. I saw, you know, pale, stale and male. And so that to me was normal up until that point. And I didn't really question it until I was exposed to something different in the States. And that gave me a sense of possibility. So coming back to Australia, I started scouting and I started looking at organizations and who was leading them, and started speaking to women of color and realizing that a lot of us experience systemic racism and bias and oppression organizationally, culturally, socially. That was part of the experience that moved me to want to do work in this area as well. So in Australia, 5% of senior executives are from a non-European Indigenous background, and 3% of CEOs are from a non-European or Indigenous background. And so when you look at those stats, you ask, okay, what percentage of them are women of color? And that would be really small. What I see around me instead is an enormous amount of talent. And that speaks to me of some of the barriers and challenges, you know, that we're facing here in Australia. To speak very frankly, like when I came back from the States, like 2008, and I walked around my community, I was like, oh my goodness, there's like all these Black people here. Because, you know, it wasn't, because in the States, that's normal. Like there's a very high population of African Americans. But in Australia at that point in time and growing up, there was not. To be honest, I don't think I encountered any, you know, Black African person except in the media. And I started walking around thinking, where did all these African people come from? Like, and that to me is evidence of the challenge that we experience in Australia, like in politics, in the decisions and policies that are being made about immigration and the demographic makeup of our country. For me, that was absolute testimony, you know, to that. Like, why are we waiting till 2008 to encourage more people from an African background to migrate to Australia? That doesn't make sense, because like, why you want to keep Australia white Australia? So I feel like things are starting to change. And the really interesting thing is when I would go to Toronto, which is where a lot of my family are, they would always comment about how Australia is racist, because that's how we're portrayed in the media. And I would always say, no, man, like I'm brown too. But now as an older, mature person who now works in this area, like now I see that. But it had to start with awareness, and then it had to start with education, and it had to start with connecting with people of different backgrounds, of who experience diversity in different areas, to know of the challenges that we face as a community. And like even in politics, like I live in the state of Victoria, and our head of Indigenous affairs is not a person of an Indigenous background. Like I understand numbers are limited in government, but you know, make a more concerted effort around that. Like for me, it's my opinion is, how dare you be the Minister of Indigenous Affairs? Like who are you to be an authority on our First Nations people? So I guess that is two things. Like yes, it's a challenge, but I guess I also see it as an opportunity. So what can we do as a community, as people, to change that? And so for me, it's about raising the next generation of women of color leaders who can see themselves as that person who does a role like that. Because our ministerial makeup is, majority of it is male, pale and stale. I think it's only been the last, you know, 2 years where we've had maybe like two or three like women of color or people of color, but still that needs to change. So when I talk to like young women of color, I tell them, you could be the first African prime minister of Australia. Like you have definitely the opportunity to do that. And I tell them that, and I speak that directly into their life, because that is the opportunity that we have, but that is a need that we have at the moment, because that is why we have all these stupid policies and bills and things like that, because it is filtered through the lens of someone that does not have lived experience at all.
So here's why the story arc is so beautiful to me, right? Yeah. Because you're in Australia, which based on what you're saying, may actually need to catch up to the United States. And then you lived in LA, yeah, you know, one of the most cosmopolitan, while still sort of having its own internal segregated communities and little holes in the walls, it is still very cosmopolitan. And then and your family is from Toronto, which many of us actually look up to because we feel like they're more inclusive than us in some ways, given, you know, admittedly, they have their own issues, I'm sure.
Yes.
So for me, what really is intriguing just from that cross-cultural psychology point is where these three geographical locations are falling on sort of a trajectory toward inclusion. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And the reason I bring that up as an emphasis and a point to make salient is two things that you responded in your initial intake is take the action and correct from what you know. And you said that, you know, I'm going to quote this. You said, quote, "We care too much about our brand and reputation rather than helping people." And that's where you saw was the gap or mismatch in our collective efforts toward inclusion. And then you, in terms of how can we do better with it, you said, "Let those with lived experience lead the work."
Yep, absolutely.
Do you want to speak more on that?
Yes. So that is something that I experienced myself. So when my background is in the future of work, innovation and business operations. And so that is what my network, my connections, my colleagues know me as. They know me as the innovation person, the future of work person, entrepreneurship lady. That's my brand and my own reputation. And so when I decided to go down the path of women of color, the term itself is quite triggering to some. And so when I started using that wording in my communication in my language, you know, I started having comments on LinkedIn from people saying, "Oh, but white is a color. I guess we are all of some color." And but coming from an artistic background, I'm like, well, that can be debated, first of all. And then secondly, you know, I thought, wow, okay, I might experience some troll-like behavior in the future from people I don't know because I am embarking down the race road. And do I want to go down that road because that will affect my brand and my reputation? And so I went to, I don't know if Ralph's is in every state in this USA. So there's a grocery store called Kohl's, and I guess it's like our version of Ralph's in LA. And I went to this grocery store and I was kind of humming and hurrying at that moment about, you know, do I just kind of run with this and this be my lead work and the future of work be secondary? Do I even want to go down this race road because I've seen the attack that my colleagues have when they advocate in this space? And I saw this really young, you know, African girl, and I wasn't dressed anything spectacular. Spectacularly, I was in my sports clothing, hair was messy, and I just kind of stopped because I was, you know, thinking. And she was right in front of me, and she was staring at me, and she looked at me with a sense of awe and wonder. And I was looking at her thinking, wow, she's looking at me like I'm someone that she respects and that she's in awe of. And I looked at her and I thought, that's what I need to be doing. I need to do this work so that the next generation, her generation, can see it so they can be it. And that's when I made that commitment. I made that internal commitment. And for me, it was about, you know, I have a quote, which is, courage is not the absence of fear, but rather that something is more important than the fear itself. And it doesn't mean that fear does not exist. It's about acknowledging it and letting it go, but focusing on what really is important. And for me, what was really important was that next generation of young women of color who needed opportunities. And me as a woman, it was not about providing more opportunities for women. It was about providing and paving a way for more women of color. For me, you know, like I spoke at a conference a couple of days ago, and the thing that I kept drumming over and over and over and over again is that the work needs to be led by people with lived experience. You know, when I have a conversation with you, you know, it's on a different level and we can talk about things in a different way. And sometimes it's about us not saying very much, but getting it 100%.
Mm-hmm.
It's because we come from that place. And in the D&I space here in Australia, there are a lot of Anglo-Saxon females that are leading the work that don't experience diversity themselves or barriers and challenges besides gender. And so therefore, what's important to them is the gender conversation. And so what they're pushing across is the gender conversation. And for me, it's about intersectionality. And even let's even acknowledge where the term came from. Who coined the term and what background was she from? But it's like we forget about that. But, you know, if someone was to coin the term, you know, like BCG matrix or competitive advantage, like some white guy, we all know his name. We all know his name and we all credit his work to him. And to me, that just highlights, you know, the need for work in this area. And that it needs to be driven by people with lived experience, that we need to inform the policies, the strategies that are affecting us. We need to have a say. You know, if we talk about politics and having an equal say in how our lives operate, shouldn't that be done at an organizational level as a consumer? Shouldn't that be done at a government level as well? So for me, it's about giving voice. And when you don't give a voice, you are exactly speaking to the very thing that we experience, which is systemic oppression.
It is so heartbreaking and gratifying and affirming and all of, you know, just it's when we have these conversations where, like you said, we understand these on a different level, being in the spaces we are, but also because of our lived experiences. Mm-hmm. And so the connection there is like so palpable that these conversations become so much more powerful. And I really want to get into this whole side conversation about cultural appreciation versus cultural appropriation. But I feel like, you know, I just need to bring you back for a whole nother episode to have that conversation. We are going to take a short break. And when we come back, I really want to hear all of the amazing things about Colorful and where it's going and how much it's grown, because I know I've been following it on your social media accounts, but I know that so many of my listeners, future listeners, are going to love what you're putting together. So I'm going to take a quick break and we'll be right back to talk about Colorful. And we're back on Leg Upward Inclusion Spotlight, Making the Invisible Visible. And I'm talking to Winita Bani, who is literally a marketing magician with this initiative, with this venture that she is. You've already launched it. And then the actual summit happens in January, right?
In March, yeah.
In March. And this summit is called Colorful. I'm going to let Winita tell you more about it, because there's so many fascinating facets to this that I'm just going to run down several rabbit holes and muck it all up. So you take it away, Winita.
Yeah, so as much as I work in the digital space, I am a big believer in human connections, that we as humans are wired to connect. You know, the energy that you have, even just simply talking to someone over the phone and meeting them face to face, is very different to sending an email or a text message. And so for me, that's what I felt. Again, it was intuition. That's what I really felt needed to happen for women of color, that we needed to enter into a physical space where we would look around and physically see that we were not alone, and that we could hear and be inspired by women of color leaders on stage, and so that we could see it so we can be it. So what I've created is Australia's first conference and awards ceremony for women of color by women of color. And there's also for allies as well. The focus is on leadership and entrepreneurship. And it's happening in March next year, 2020, in Melbourne, Australia. The reason why it's happening in March is to coincide with International Women's Day, because one, International Women's Day really lacks diversity here. And that's the thing I keep hearing from women of color all the time. It's like, why would I go to an International Women's Day event when my cultural background is not, like, just multicultural backgrounds are not being represented as speakers in topics that are being covered? And so for me, it's also to highlight in a very direct way that International Women's Day is much more broadly more about the different intersections of gender, and not just about females advancing in general, because what we're seeing is male pale and stale being replaced with female pale and stale. So for me, it's about having that space and creating a really dynamic space as well, where we feel like first class citizens, where we feel like we have an amazing experience. You know, there are a lot of multicultural events that are held in a community center, which is great, and I know that's what community centers are supposed to be used for. But I guess what we're used to is events and initiatives where physically we feel like second-rate citizens, where we feel like we are to be sorried and felt sorry for and pitied for. What I wanted to create with Colorful is a space that was totally the opposite of that. So I had a soft launch event about 4 weeks ago, and in 2 weeks we sold out. We had 157 people attend the event. It was a mixture of women of color and women of color allies and just allies in general. I also put the whole event together quite crazily in 2 weeks, and we got so much feedback. You know, I think everyone just got a real buzz being in a space where they were like, hell, everyone looks like me, you know, like different cultural backgrounds, but you know, where we have something in common, and that is we are women of color. Mm-hmm. And so the energy in the room was crazy. Like, I had created an amazing 90s R&B playlist, and I could not hear the music at all because the volume was just drowning out, because the energy was just contagious and it was high. And majority of people came after work, right? So the event started at 6. So everyone would have been tired. No, everyone was not tired. They walked in, they saw the room, the environment informed them consciously and subconsciously of something different. Mm-hmm. that they walked into a room feeling like $1 million. That was the vibe that I was going for. You know, what we're normally used to is a token woman of color on a panel on a board, on a panel of speakers. So out of 10 speakers, we're maybe like one or two. I had 12 speakers in total, including myself. And out of the 12, 10 were women of color. So they went to an event and space where they were the majority, where speakers, over 80% of speakers were women of color. And that blew all their socks away to the point where they were so loud, just connecting with each other. You know, they made so many connections. And I saw that because I knew who, you know, had come alone and things like that. And I also put effort around that. So I had delegated some amazing friends to be hostesses with the mostest and to search out the individuals that had come alone and connect them with other women of color, because that's what it's all about. Kemi, who was one of my keynote speakers, really struggled to quieten the room. She's spoken to crowds of like 1,000. I've spoken to schools where there's been like 1,500 kids and I've quietened them all down. Both of us really struggled multiple times because they just could not get enough of connecting with each other. And we had so much positive feedback about, thank you for even having us an event like this to advocate and highlight the need of work in this area. Other people said, you know, we were all thinking about it, but you didn't. And others were saying, you know, like that they just had the opportunity to see women of color leaders and that gave them the inspiration and the empowerment that they needed to leave their job, because they realized that it was not them, that they weren't the problem. The problem was the barriers and challenges that they were placing for that employee based on their cultural and gender background. So there was a lot of connection that happened, and it was all a whirlwind. I did not drink a drop of alcohol, but I felt like I was completely drunk the entire night because the energy was just contagious. And it just hammered the fact of why I am doing this and why we need an event like this. And that was just for 157 people. And that was just an evening from 6 till 9. That wasn't the actual conference and the award ceremony. So I'm definitely looking forward to the actual conference and awards night that is going to take place in March. What I was surprised about was the interest that it garnered from other countries and from other states. That highlighted to me, because I'm building a digital platform called Amina Azaria, I was going to launch the membership platform at the conference, and I just had so much feedback about wanting to have access to a place where they can connect with people that attended the launch that I just set it up. So
wow.
Yeah.
So Amina Azaria is live now?
Yeah, it's not pumped out commercially. Like, I haven't like let everyone know, but I basically spent a couple of days and a Saturday. I found an easy way to go around it where I didn't need tech people to come in and build the platform from scratch. I have been searching for a platform, and I basically came across this platform, and I was just like, wow, it actually does everything that I needed to be. It's not ideal because it's not a platform that's integrated into my website, but I thought the whisper that I'm getting at the moment, which is getting pretty loud, is I met with this person. I don't have their contact details. Do you know them? And I was like, no, because if you can't remember their name, I have absolutely no idea who you're talking about. Because out of the 157 people, I probably only knew like 20% of the people that actually turned up. The rest, I had no like idea who they were before, prior to that event. And so I spent a couple of days and my entire Saturday just getting it up to the bare bones of what it needed to be, accessed. So I just thought, stop it. I'll just do it now.
Yeah, I had no idea it went live because I know that was sort of a fleeting thought that you had the last time we talked. So I hope whoever's listening to this as a woman of color is getting the goosebumps that I'm getting right now, because Winita and I spoke on the phone less than 4 weeks ago, and this digital platform was a fleeting afterthought to the rest of the event that, you know, she wanted to think about in the future, and it went live.
Yes. So I just thought, you know what? I'll just do it. I'm just going to do it. I'm just going to go with the flow, because it comes down to the point around connection and connecting with each other and being part of a community as well. Sharing the work that we're all doing and how we can benefit each other. And so what I thought is to have the digital community, but to organically also start to set up chapters around in different places so that women of color have the opportunity to not just meet once a year at a really large event, but have the opportunity to have more more intimate meetups and to connect with each other, share each other's work. You know, just like you and I have connected, but you know, you're in the States and I'm here in Australia, and we've had such interesting and encouraging conversation. You know, I think that needs to happen a bit more. And so that's currently where I'm at. So, which is going a bit ahead of schedule, but just going with my own intuition. Because what I even see with women of color stuff is that there are some people that are doing work around women of color, but you can tell by their marketing material, you can tell by their community that it's very geared towards one community. And that's not actually where that term stemmed from. You know, the term stemmed from the 1970s, where women from predominantly African-American, Asian, Latino backgrounds came together to rename a report that they were submitting to a women's conference. And they agreed on the term women of color. And that was because it was a term that was reflective of their universal experiences and backgrounds as well. And so for me, it's, you know, if you're going to use the term, you know, it's a social and political term, but it's also about, you know, us having shared experiences that, you know, it's common. You know, like I can speak to an African Australian sister about her relationship with aunties in her family. And it's very similar to my relationship with aunties about, you know, like being going back about marriage and putting your career first as opposed to having babies and like all this kind of stuff. Like our experiences are very similar, but at the same time, because we have those experiences, we can fight for each other. We can advocate for each other. We can support each other. And that is absolutely fundamental.
Isn't that funny? Aunties are the same everywhere. There's something to be said about that.
I know. I just hope I'm not one of them.
Oh gosh, me too. Oh, but I see. I'm on the path to that. So you're gonna like pull me out of it if you ever see me walking down that path.
Absolutely,
Juanita. This was amazing. This was such an amazing conversation, and I think we definitely need to have another conversation about the cultural appropriation aspect. Like I said, and I can think of like I don't know 5-6 other things already. But we'll chat more about those. And for all my listeners, all of the information about Juanita's ventures and her latest initiatives, and especially Colorful, they're all going to be in the episode description page with the appropriate links and with her link to her email contact. So if this is something that you're interested in, contact Juanita, because she really, really knows what she's talking about. And you know, everyone that knows me knows I don't say that about too many people.
Thank you.
Is there anything, you know, like a final message you want to give out to our audience out there about a message of inspiration, a message to compel them to action, whatever you want?
So Shirley Chisholm was the first Black woman to actually go for presidency in the States back in the 1970s. She has many valuable quotes, but one of her quotes ended in the phrase that she was not just a Black woman that was the first Black woman to go for presidency in the States or be in Congress. She wanted to be known as someone who dared to be herself in every capacity. And when I read that quote, that sent shivers up my spine. And ironically, when I was putting the soft launch event for Colorful together, I realized that that was actually what I was doing in this process, that I was daring to be myself, from the 90s R&B playlist to, you know, having my hair out curly and fluffy and not straightening it on the actual day, you know, not wearing so much foundation so that my freckles on my nose could show, was to be myself. And I realized that in this work of liberating women of color, that in the process I was also liberating, you know, myself. And it was about daring to be yourself in all capacities, inside and out. You know, like once I guess because, you know, I've been in the States quite a bit, but I call it my inner Black girl. So sometimes my attitude, the way that I talk, you know, it's very different when I talk with people from my community, when I talk to women of color in general. It's very different to when I would talk to a white guy in a professional setting. And I remember this one situation, I actually just let myself go in this one brief moment. And I do a lot of hand gestures and my body moves a lot. And I think it's just a dancer in me that just kind of comes out. And he kind of stopped and he kind of like went back and he looked at me and he's like, oh, where's this coming from? And I was like, what coming from? He's like, the hand. And I was like, oh, okay. Yeah, sorry. And in that moment, like I had to suppress, you know, who I was. And so for me, it's about, you know, if I want to use my hands and gesture a lot, like that's just culturally like who I am, you know, and that's just my cultural background. And for me, it's about giving permission to just be yourself. And we keep talking about that, like be yourself, or like, what does that actually mean? Like for me, sometimes it starts off with the basics, like not straightening my hair, you know, going to a South Asian restaurant and choosing to eat with my hands, or going to like a Filipino restaurant and eating with my hands, or Indonesian, because, you know, a lot of us actually do culturally eat with our hands, and being brave and bold about that, you know, wearing a cultural outfit to a formal event. Sometimes it starts off with the little things, and it's about looking at opportunities that we can just really just be who we are. If we are someone that feels quite passionate about a particular topic and talks with a lot of hand movement and a lot of head movement, do that and be yourself, because that is where the real connection with people happens. And if the people, like that guy, gets taken aback by that, then they are clearly showing themselves as someone that is not going to be your number one supporter and advocate, and they actually need to be removed from your circle of influence. So for me, the number one thing is to, and the journey that I am continuously on myself as a woman of color, is to dare to be myself in all aspects of my life, in all interactions, whether it's with family, whether it's as an entrepreneur, or whether it's in a corporate setting, is to just dare to be myself.
It's so interesting that you said dare to be yourself, because one of the challenges I put forth for myself is, not last weekend, but the weekend before, I wore a sari to an event and I posted a sari picture about what that embodies for me, and how, to me, that's making the invisible visible and all of this other stuff. And in that, in a hashtag, I challenged myself that one of these days I'm going to do a diversity and inclusion training or a keynote in a sari.
Yeah, awesome. Amazing.
I am not going to back away from that. I am going to hold myself accountable for that, and I'm going to post the video. And just the thought of that is so empowering, which I feel like women living in India and Sri Lanka who wear saris every day, they're probably listening to this like, that's a big deal to me. That's a big step for me. Yeah. And, you know, it's exactly like you said, I am daring to show that side of myself. I think we're all on this path of really showing ourselves, really being authentic and being the change we need to see happen in our futures.
Yeah. Absolutely. Amen to that.
Yeah. So thank you so much, Winitha. This was such an amazing conversation. And I know I took you way over time, but thank you so much.
Vice versa.
For all my listeners, I hope you enjoyed this conversation. Let us know what you think. All of Winitha's information will be in the podcast description page, as will mine. I would love to hear your feedback. And we will be back soon with another episode of Leg Upward Inclusion Spotlight, Making the Invisible Visible with Dr. Aparajita Jeetagunta. Until then, I hope you all have a wonderful day.